All righty, we live. Week 7 still going, so we're still going to keep some live updates. Got the phone rolling down here, but Brandon, it was a fun weekend, man. How about this? 3-2 with Oregon, the Ducks, with a big win over Ohio State. 4 survives, 7 survives, and 8 survives. So a lot of close calls. Last week we had a lot of the upsets, man, but this week, and then nine still battling 13 with LSU and Ole Miss. So what was the first things that stuck out about this weekend?
The word you just used, survives. But I think it's about the bigger game, because Oregon now, I think, has stake to being number one and having the best resume, because the win against Boise looks better each and every week. And, you know, Texas has beaten two teams that are very defensively oriented and offensively inept.
Offensively challenged, for sure. We'll get to the Red River rivalry, but I think, man, the first half was weird of Ohio State, Oregon. Like, you saw a little bit of everything. Ohio State came out pass, which I think try to break some tendencies to think you probably come out aggressive and run the football and be physical. And then the weird not replay. By the way, I'm really getting sick of replays. If it's borderline, dude, blow your whistle, stop the game, replay it. Somebody has to be able to do that. We've seen too many plays that impact games over and over. And then I thought Oregon was going to kind of lose it with missed extra point, chasing points. But the weird onside kick, you got Holden spitting on somebody, getting ejected. Like, yeah, it had a little bit of everything, man, in the first half, but I thought the biggest difference in the football game was, man, our boy Gabriel balled out. Like, he played great. And we talked about him being good in big games, and he was fantastic. And you saw the quick trigger, and we talked about it here before our show too. The only real weakness or area you thought maybe there was some plays to be made against Ohio State was the cornerback position. And Oregon 8 out wide. Tez Johnson and bigger Evan Stewart, number 7.
Evan Stewart.
They were winning out wide. Honestly, man, that was the biggest difference in the game, because it changed the way Ohio State had to play coverage.
Yeah, and he just hadn't done it. He hadn't done a whole lot of it, pushing the ball down the field. And like you said, breaking tendency with Ohio State. Oregon felt like that. And then when you needed it, pulls it and runs it for the touchdown later in the game. Like, that element, the ability to just have that trump card at any time when you really need it and or really want to use it, that's a different level with them. And now you look at Lanning, that was his first victory over a top five team. Ryan Day now 1-7 against top five teams. It's not good.
And I'm not worried about Ohio State. I'm not worried about them at all. Now, I will say this. The left tackle goes off on a cart. That's a big deal. They've been banged up along the offensive line a little bit, which can be a big deal. Clock management down the stretch for Ohio State was ungood. The offensive pass interference, didn't realize the clock.
What do you think of that call?
I didn't think it was a great call, to be honest. But don't get me started on the refs, because I think the refs have been sucking it up. So, but I didn't think it was a great offensive PI. He was physical, but I think that he also got in the guy's space. You're allowed to keep your space as a defensive guy. I didn't think he, like, completely dislodged him. And then you didn't realize the clock was running. And then, dude, Will Howard, you've been in this game a long time. Like, they got you because of your experience, and you run the football in the last play and let the clock run out, man. That was, you know, we got on Nico a little bit for doing that last week, and you know, not giving yourself a chance to win. That was a bad deal too. That was a bad decision late in the game. You've got to throw that. You've got to get rid of it. You got one timeout left. So, not great decision. But here's the thing, man. Ohio State hadn't given up a 100-yard rusher. They did. Ohio State hadn't given up a 100-yard receiver. They did. Their defense obviously looked a lot more human today than they've been looking. Their pass rush looked a little bit more human. But I also don't think there's a lot of Dylan Gabriels out there in this country that can get the ball out of his hands to dynamic playmakers fast. By the way, Ferguson at tight end's a baller too for Oregon. Like, he's a really, really good player.
Favorite player on our offense.
Yeah, then Jordan James goes over 100. So this was a team win. That they missed a couple extra points. But LSU, by the way, not LSU, Oregon. Dan Lanning's post-game interview, Brent, is why I love everything about Dan Lanning. The dude is frothing at the mouth. He's got like the spit coming out. It's hitting the camera. He's going nuts because it means that much. He looks like he could run on the field right now. Like, he is insane. Like, his intensity, he gets it from Kirby, he gets it from Nick, and he keeps those guys in check. And when you got a guy that cares that much as your leader, you're going to care that much too. And it was coming through in spades at the end of the game. And that's why he is the man.
It's amazing to think about the last 3 years now, or 2 years, and then this season for Oregon, because I looked it up because I was curious, because I thought it was very similar. Last year against Washington, the two losses, 36-33, 34-31. The previous year, loss against Washington, loss against Oregon State, 37-34, 38-34. When they're playing big games, it's just going to be a in the 30s game. And do you get the fourth down calls? Like, they got one later in the game that, you know, led to that eventual field goal, but
they missed one. They also missed one on fourth and inches, or fourth and one from the 1 yard line too, where they were aggressive and it came back to bite them. So
yeah, that's just how he's going to live. Like, he's very aggressive, and those games are going to live in the 30s with his team. And, you know, no Birch, like that was one where Jordan Birch didn't play, whatever the injury was that he had in practice.
Yeah. And he's their best pass rusher. He's a baller. I mean, he is a really, really good. By the way, it's so reminiscent of the Thibodeau game when they went to Ohio State across the country when Thibodeau couldn't play. Like, that was kind of crazy, and they still won, and you had some doubts. But where do we go next?
They're in the driver's seat. They're, by the way, absolute driver's seat. They got Illinois at home, at Michigan.
Illinois just scored 7,000 points. But, yeah.
But but the thing is, like you said, we could see this game again, and it could completely flip otherwise. But I guess I was just checking what's going on in the
23-23 LSU Ole Miss, second. 20.
Yeah. But Texas in the Red River rivalry, like, it was very evident quickly that, like we talked about in the pregame, Oklahoma just couldn't muster any offense, and it just changed the game. But the other thing we talked about was the rust factor with Ewers, and
it was real.
It was there early. It was real early.
It was real. Throws a pick, first possession, had a touchdown on a post, next possession, missed it. But, yeah, you could tell he started to get more reps later in the game. I like that they kept throwing the football later in the game, because I think it was important for him to – listen, I don't think he needs to build his confidence, but it was good to see him complete some passes, make some things happen. But he definitely had some rust. But Texas just, you know, it's, you have a, when you have a complete team, because their defense can play, and when Oklahoma's not a complete team and they're playing with an arm behind their back with the offense, like, cause getting that pick early for Oklahoma, getting no points, getting a bad punt from Texas, getting no points. Now, listen, Texas fumbles and then falls on it, and I think the game was over. But Texas, Georgia next week is going to be an absolute showdown. And I think you'll need your best version of Quinn Ewers, because I think it could be a high scoring game. It could be a great game. But oof, Ole Miss almost threw an interception, by the way, on that play on third and long. But it was all Texas. The difference between the offense is just, it's too big. It's too great to overcome.
Mm-hmm. And when you think about the sort of SEC component of this now, because this is obviously an SEC game, one program looks ready to compete and one doesn't necessarily look like they're ready. Because whether you're like in the SEC, you can't survive being just an offensive team. You can't survive being just a defensive team. Certain places I think you can't there, because there's too much talent. And Oklahoma just isn't that up to any sort of standard on one side of the ball.
No, and I would have loved to have seen them play with, you know, they're down so many receivers, down so many linemen. Oh, yeah. Like, if they weren't so banged up, what that would look like. But Michael Hawkins Jr., he's drinking through a fire hose too. Like, he just, when he gets sped up, he won't reset his feet and make the plays you'd like to see him make. But how about Penn State making the plays that they
need? Speaking of making plays.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Penn State, first of all, let's start this game where it started. USC came out making big plays, and Penn State got the first field goal to go up 3-0, but I think USC, you know, did a great job. USC's running backs, by the way, are really good. Like, it's by far the best part of their team. And if they keep, if they'll keep feeding Woody Marks and if they could get more from the ground game, I think this team could keep, I think this team could be, they could be undefeated right now. If they could just be a little bit better up front to get their guys time, because Marks and Joyner, you saw Joyner with the fake reverse making big plays. Dude, Penn State for a little while, they looked like they were in trouble. I mean,
looked overwhelmed.
Yeah,
and they were down. The travel was real and that was going to be a conversation.
But how cool was it to watch him bounce back?
Aller made plays at what, multiple fourth downs there late. And then I know the overtime, it got a little iffy. Your buddies with the black and the white stripes.
I mean, first, let me stay positive for a minute, Brent. Don't try to get me. Don't try to get me off my rocker. By the way, how many times, Brent, in the last couple of weeks have I kept mentioning Ty Warren? Like, I have kept mentioning this dude because he's a freak of league, and they put him at quarterback. By the way, he completed one pass for 9 yards. He ran it for 4 yards, and then he had 17 receptions, an NCAA record. It was basically find 44. That's all it was. Like, wheel route, three of those. But they used a here is the difference between Penn State. Penn State loses that game 1,000% last year. Touchdown LSU. LSU wins the football game. Mm-hmm. So another upset that we're going to talk about in a second. Penn State loses this football game a year ago, Brent. Like, they absolutely lose this football game without Koltunecki. Koltunecki dials up play after play after play, open receiver. Dude, they ran speed option. They ran power read. They ran shovels. Like, they give you everything they can. They bring 71 in at H-back. They put their tight end at quarterback. They played three quarterbacks on the first drive. Like, they do so much to create. Now, listen, I still don't think they're overly explosive. And I'm shocked that they can't run the football better than they are. I think they lose this game a year ago. They make plays. They can continue to find Warren. Their defense, by the way, they've given up 3 points in the third quarter all year. They make great adjustments. They made enough plays. And then, you know, I'm going to let you talk before I address the overtime.
Well, watching Abdul Carter make plays for them, like, I know one pass rush move that I saw from him. He slow played the tackle and then did the dip. That was very explosive. And that's, they have playmakers there.
Sutton, Carter, those guys on defense, you can tell are really good. They're well coached. They got beat. They gave up some big plays today, but they rallied. Refs sucked it up in the overtime, man. Like, if you want to give me that both of those weren't PI, I will disagree, but with
one definitely was
a joyful heart. By the way, I don't care who wins the game. It has nothing to do with me, but one of those two calls have to be called, and you got to make the kick regardless, but refs, too much of this crap, man. Too much of the deciding games late in the season or late in the game, deciding games. And it absolutely drives me nuts, but let's go LSU, man.
I mean, I'll say, happened.
Well, and here's the thing about LSU. What have we talked about with LSU, Brent? We've talked about them not closing games. We saw Brian Kelly week one getting pissed off, you know, slamming his thing. We got to do this. We got to finish it. We got to close games. They needed plays late in this game. Dude, Nussmeier, how do you not love this cat, man? Like, fourth down and 10, he makes plays. He scrambles around and finds Taylor. Taylor got involved late in this game from the tight end spot, by the way. Yeah. He had to get more involved. He did, made big plays. But this offense, you know, shots aggressive down the field against Ole Miss because I think they had to take shots. They knew it. Ole Miss plays aggressive because that defensive line usually gets pressure. But we talked about it this week coming into the game. We talked about Death Valley at night and how much that can impact games and ruffle feathers and make things hard. And Ole Miss didn't create enough. They kicked too many field goals. They kicked four field goals. Seeing that from Lane.
It's a defensive game. I think it was very much a defensive game. A lot of pressure. LSU for LSU. That guy can get after the quarterback. But Nussmeier is amazing because you'll see him make two of just really random where is the ball going throws, and then he'll pull back and make two of the best throws you've seen all year. And he did it late, and then Lacy made the play, It sets up a very interesting ride for LSU because they've got two straight road games now at Arkansas and then at A&M. And like, it just doesn't get any easier when that schedule with the SEC.
Well, and then they'll host Bama.
Host Bama after a bye. But like, you think about that. All right, we got to go to Arkansas, who's coming off a bye and just had a big win of their own. And then A&M's rolling, and then you get Bama at home. But big win for them. More so, I think, impactful loss for Ole Miss just because of their schedule and what's coming up with them. Already having the loss to Kentucky, that almost puts them in a win-out type situation, I think. We kind of talked about this game as a potential, you know, loser-leaves-town match.
Yeah.
And that was a big-time loss
for Ole Miss. Well, and Ole Miss, and you saw Trey Harris didn't finish the game. He was in street clothes, which hurt them. He missed a big play early that he could have scored a touchdown.
Made a really big play.
Yeah, he made a big play too, but like their offense looked out of sync. Jackson Dart looked like, you know, late. Here's the thing. They still struggle to run the football and punch it in the red, and they're still missing shots. I don't know, man. We saw their offense the first several weeks, and we were like, dude, they're world beaters, but they played some of the worst teams in the country, and it's just It's very much come down to earth. And you know, this offense, the running back spot, I feel like, you know, Bentley gave him more tonight. I feel like he gave him some punch too, and they made some plays, but it's just not. They're just not as explosive as you would think they would have been. And I think it drives Lane absolutely nuts, especially having to kick four field goals. He's the analytical guy. Like, he goes for it. That's what he does.
And when you think about if you're an Ole Miss fan, offense is what we do. Offense is what we do. Well, guess what? Your team's a defensive-led team. And you don't really have enough guys in the backfield on offense to consistently.
And by the way, just don't, and you can't have these mistakes right before the half with less than 30 seconds left. You're throwing the football or you give the ball to your running back and he fumbles the football and LSU gets a field goal out of it. And again, their defense in the past, I think, would have broken several of these games in the past three games, but their defense is so good. They've kept them in ball games and been consistent. All right, where are we going next, brother?
I mean, how far back do you want to go? Because Bama, South Carolina was a very interesting start to the day.
Are you concerned about Bama?
I said this when we talked about it a few weeks ago. I think the likelihood that they would lose three games more so than they would go undefeated. But because you watch them play, and if 2-4 aren't on the field, like if you just take them off the field, what do you see? Because I don't really see difference makers outside of 2-4.
Yeah, and I think defensively, I don't see a lot either, which is a big concern for them.
I'm just the entirety of their team.
It's what's strange, man. It's strange when you start looking at box scores, and you know, usually it used to take like a quarterback balling out Steven Garcia style and winning the turnover battle like to beat Alabama, and now like you see people can outgain them. And just like today, I mean, I think South Carolina ended up outgaining them. And South Carolina, you know, made some mistakes, you know, down the stretch. But it's just crazy that the level of Bama has fallen off a little bit. Listen, they're still a good team. And Jalen Milroe is still the most dangerous guy in the world with the ball in his hands. Like,
did you think he looked tired at the end of the game, though?
I think he looked beat up, bro.
Yeah, he looked like there was some exhaustion there where it's like, because you look at the usage rate and how much he has to carry the football for them right now. He looked at the end of the game where he could have gotten five more yards, get another first down. He's just kind of, all right, I'll just go out of bounds here.
He looked like he needed the ice tub. And yes. Here's another thing too. And I'm going to harp on this, and I'm going to talk about this for every team in the country. The clock management in the world sucks. It is amazing that Lincoln Riley is getting paid all that money. And this, by the way, I'm talking about Bama because Bama, we're going to get to Bama's clock management. But like Lincoln Riley to get paid all that money, and we have three timeouts and we have no clue what the heck's going on. Now, listen, you throw a pick and you get lucky because the clock management was that bad. But what are we doing? I mean, you move the ball down the field. You could have still ran the football if you had run the football if you want the clock to tick, use a timeout, get set up. I don't get it. And by the way, I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but I wrote it down somewhere. Yeah, Lincoln Riley's 5-8 in his last 13 games.
Yep. Well, yeah, by the way, he has 11 losses at USC in 33 games. He only had 10 and 65 at Oklahoma.
And then you see clock management with Ohio State and them not understanding with the OPI that there was that you need to use a timeout or get up on the ball and get ready. And then Bama. I think that's something that needs to be talked about in the huddle before the play happens. I'm not saying this is easy, but like we're going to tell everybody, we're going to get the first down and get down. Because if we catch the ball and we get down, the ball game is over. There is no chance for South Carolina to get back in the game. If we score a touchdown like they did with a couple minutes left, with a minute something left, now they're up by 8. And now South Carolina goes down the field. They don't get the 2-point conversion, but – man, it gave him a chance to stay in the football game. And that's it's weird.
Man, I know coaches have that element. Like, they probably have someone in their ear talking about those situations.
100%.
But it still seemed that the fact that it is still an issue. And I've always wondered this, especially now with like the Jets getting rid of their coach and then hire, you know, the DC's the interim coordinator. What would happen if you just had the head coach in the box, just in a nice quiet room, and he's just kind of observing things? Hey, fellas, we need a timeout here. And you've got defensive coordinators, offensive coordinators making calls versus being on the sideline and he, and just because everything's going fast. But yes, clock management. And this is kind of the theme for me of college football through seven weeks is it's more so who can screw up the least.
Yeah.
Versus people who are, where you just see consistent playmaking. Like even so go to a game that, you know, we kind of talked about previewing. Iowa State looks like just is buttoned up in every phase, takes care of the football, tackles well, all the little details that you think, all right, this is something that's a problem for so many teams. They just look like a solid, well-coached football team who's not going to beat themselves.
You don't see a lot of elite, and you don't see a lot of like, but you don't see a lot of self-inflicted wounds. Yeah.
No.
But – anyway,
hate it for the Mountaineers, by the way, but that was
do what? Well.
The Mountaineers kind of blew that one a little bit. The couldn't tackle. Garrett Green like throwing it to the other team a little bit.
I'm pretty confident that you can't count on the Mountaineers every week, Brent. Like we've got to have like a there's usually a regress to the mean.
I don't count on them every week. That is definitely.
Let's tip the cap to some people too before we get into some more big games, because I want to tip my cap to the Florida Gators because they fought like mad, man. Like, I love the way Florida competed. Dude, they flew around. They were physical as crap. They did an unbelievable job running the football. They played two quarterbacks until Graham Mertz got hurt. Unfortunately, it looks like he's done, I think. But then, still, even late in the game, DJ Lagway came up with big plays.
The last touchdown was...
it was a laser.
Great throw.
It was an unbelievable laser on 3rd and 17. Great pass. Brent, I have nothing to lose. There is no Florida, dude, we've got nothing to lose. We are in hostile territory. Make it one play. Don't make it a whole series where I have to stop you and play complimentary football on both sides. Like, I got to stop them. Man, Florida, they competed their tail off. And by the way, forget the ending because they competed. They played great. They look like they got a stud at quarterback for the future too in Lagway. Is he perfect? No. Is he a freshman? Yes. He's going to make mistakes, but you can see the talent
ability
off of this cat. Like he's got it in spades. He can run it. He's big. He's physical. He can sling the mess out of it. So tip of the cap to Florida fans, to the Florida Gators, excuse me, because they fought, they competed. I love what I saw.
Let's go tip of the cap on Friday night to the atmosphere at Arizona State. And Dillingham, speaking of interviews after the game,
he said, "I was that guy coming around.
I'm that guy." And he starts jumping. That was amazing. So amazing. And by the way, I know you are less than fond of kickers.
It's a good way to put it.
But did you see Arizona State's kicker? You got to go. All right. You got to go find the clip. I'll send it to you.
You talk about the stripe on the kickoff when he knocked the piss out of the guy?
Yeah, and then stood over top. Yeah, okay.
And, like, he got a little swag to him too. Yes, I can get down with that.
Well, so tip of the cap to Arizona State winning at home.
By the way,
and the energy and the kicker for the Arizona State.
That was one of my picks this week too. I had Arizona State because of their run defense. Now, I had zero clue that Cam Rising was going to play that bad because I've never seen that in my life. Like, he was, I mean, the ball didn't have any gas on it. He got folded up with his knee. I mean, that poor kid, man, has had so many injuries, but they couldn't do much. But Arizona State, they had a backup quarterback too. Jeff Sims comes in the game, man. But they tote rock, they run the football, they stop the rock. Dillingham, by the way, Brent, one of the cooler dudes I've ever met. Like, I met him when he was in Eugene when he started a couple years ago, when he was an OC. And when he took the job, I texted him, like, he's just a great dude, a great play designer, and you could see the excitement. So I love that. I love that tip of the cap.
The running back is real too. That dude's tough to tackle.
Dude, something 6 yards a carry plus, like, just runs hard downhill. How about Pitt and BYU, homie? Pitt and BYU are undefeated. Mm-hmm. Like, Pitt and BYU are undefeated. Like, that is incredible. That is crazy. Tip of the cap. Cal, I don't know what you were doing going for 2-point conversions. I have no clue. Pitt, it ain't your concern because the Panthers did what they were supposed to do, took care of business late, and then BYU just hammers away and take care of
BYU's
business.
BYU's not skating by in these games. They are taking care of absolute business. Now I will say the Big 12 is kind of a coin flip because now you got Iowa State, who's 6-0 for the first time in like 85 years.
Yep.
BYU is undefeated. Texas Tech still undefeated in the conference. And then you got K-State and Colorado that are still playing now. K-State's up a touchdown. So
we're bouncing around. But, hey, man, you do that chat thing because I don't know how to do the chat thing. But if you find questions with people, you know.
I will do that.
If y'all fire away.
Another tip of the cap to Cade Klubnik.
Dude.
Since game one against Georgia, 1,390 yards throwing, 17 touchdowns and a pick, 225 yards rushing, 4 touchdowns. Granted, they have not played Murderers Row as a schedule. But I did an interview for another site with a guy that covers Clemson. And it's got, like, hey, what does the Clemson fan base want above all else? And his answer was to get back to fun offense and explosive down the field, scoring points, things like that. And Clemson has delivered that in spades over the past few weeks and look like they're a team to be reckoned with and going to move in the ACC and possibly even see them in the ACC championship game.
Well, how about 14 for 17 on play action for 147, a touchdown and interception. So they're getting the running game going, the play action off of it, and also the QB run game, you know, that they can continue to do too. So I think they're good. How about tip of the cap for Georgia Tech for not quitting? Because they almost royally screwed that up. I mean, did you see the end of the game? It was
I saw the last play.
Before the last play, where the game changes, it's 3rd and 1, Brent, and they're on their own 35-ish. 3rd and 1, 2-minute warning has already hit, and they shift in motion and jump off sides. So now it's 3rd and 6, Georgia Tech. They run the football, they get 4. So would have been a first down, would have been a ball game, or at least North Carolina, you know, using their timeouts. And they gave the ball back to North Carolina with plenty of time. North Carolina goes down the field, had a chance, tied it up. And then they get the ball back with like 20 seconds and they just hand it off. And they're like, oh yeah, we're going to just hand it off and get out of here. Here's the thing. They didn't take a knee. They handed the ball off. They got it to a playmaker. Next thing you know, you look up and the son of a gun's down the field scoring a touchdown.
Hit his head on goal.
When you play against a UNC defense, you never know what's going to happen, okay? You might drop 50 and a half, which, yes, has been done by Madison this year. That actually
happened. Tech's interesting because they have, like, coming up in the next, you know, say 3 weeks, they got Notre Dame next week in Atlanta, which, okay. And then in a couple weeks after that, you get Miami. They get Miami at home too. So in terms of not a spoiler, sort of this outside team who wants to make some noise and for them having a big time season, yeah, it's there for them to have that big time season. Okay, another tip of the cap. The Commodores, Vandy, no hangover effect. Go on the road, and yes, it's at Kentucky, and yes, it's not like it's the biggest win ever, but still, it would have been easy for them to just not show up, given all the positivity that came their way.
Or partied all week and just went nuts.
Or that, whatever it is that they did on Broadway. the Pavia Palace. But no hangover there. Now they get Ball State next week. And then after that, Texas comes to Nash Vegas. So, like,
that's not one we circled before the season.
Mm-mm. That was Texas in the gauntlet. Oklahoma, Georgia, at Vandy.
At Vandy too. That's tough. That's Nick Saban. Here's a question for you. Are you more concerned with Tennessee or are you more concerned with Alabama?
I mean, the fact that they play each other next weekend and I guess a big game, I'm more concerned with Tennessee because of just the struggles and them finding offense. It's not like that's something you normally say about a Josh Heupel team. It's more about, can they do things in certain situations? They haven't been able to find offense.
Nope.
So, all right. So let's see.
Outside of Samson, he's run the ball well. Mm-hmm. He's done a really good job. But it's crazy because they're starting to get some injuries on defense, which you worry about. But their defense, man, they just keep doing what they do, man. They keep keeping them in games. They keep giving them a chance to win. By the way, they were shut out again, second time in 2 weeks. They were shut out in the first half. Like,
yep.
And Nico's not seeing it. It's not progressing like you would want it to if you're a Tennessee fan. You need to see more. And by the way, they relegated him to a game manager late in that game. Like, mm-hmm. They had seven. I wrote this down. There was 8 minutes left, and it was literally run clock, punt. And they were trying to get out of there with a win. And
yeah,
it was just it was surprise. They were rolling him out a lot off of the run action to cut the field in half to help his decision making process. And it was just a guy that's struggling to throw the ball over the middle of the field, which you saw such greatness in game one and last year versus Iowa. And he's definitely struggling right now, but it's so nice if you're on Rocky Top. It's got to be a good feeling that your defense can keep you in it, your run game can keep you in it, and you made plays, you know, late in the game when you needed to. But I'm a little bit concerned with their offense, but I feel like Bama's just something's missing now. Like something happened, and it was the second half of the Georgia game. I don't know if Georgia did something that everybody said, okay, we're going to just start doing and we're going to start attacking. But, you know, if you look at third down defense and you look at what they've done since the second half versus Georgia, it's been bad. It's not been great. And it's not what we're used to seeing from Alabama. I mean, South Carolina had a real chance. So if I'm Alabama, I'm definitely nervous, definitely worried, but Tennessee and them getting each other is coming up soon. So
that's it. Can I hold my answer until after the game next week?
Yeah, that'll make it a little easier.
All right, so here's one that I'll show. Is Penn State, that's on the screen, is Penn State worthy of a top five ranking?
That's such a great question. That's such a great question because I think people are going to point to USC and go, USC's not any good. Well, I think USC's good. Do I think they're elite? No, but pull up the rankings. How many elite teams do we have? Like, Ohio State just went down. Oregon is in that mix, obviously. So you got to go Oregon and Texas are a notch above everybody else. Well, now you got to start putting everybody else in the mix. Like, I think it'd be curious to say with Penn State, like, how would they do against Georgia? Like, that's kind of how you start to do it. But I will say this. I think everybody was looking at the SEC early in the season going, wow, they would win every matchup versus the Big Ten. I mean, you literally started doing that. I think you're going to revise the mess out of that, and you're going to have to look at yourself honestly and say the SEC is slowly starting to tick itself down, and you're starting to see that all these teams are really have warts. All these teams, mm-hmm. except Texas, by the way, Texas still needs deserves their props and their flowers. But I think next week we'll find out more about Texas too in that Georgia game. But man, I'm good with them being a top five team because have they played the greatest schedule? No. They found a way to win. And by the way, the time zone thing has been good too for everybody. That's been hard. I mean, 1-9, I think, was the going multiple time zones and to be able to tough it out and find a way to make plays was a good thing for Penn State. But they don't look overly great on both sides of the football. I don't see dominance, but I see really, really good. And that might be enough this year to play for a national title. Seriously, that might be enough.
And so much of what the playoff, I think, will be about, given that what you said with no true elite team, is matchup. And maybe you just find the right matchup that fits you. All right, so first next one here. So Jacob says it was an honor to meet you today between the hedges. So there you go, to Jacob. Speaking of between the hedges,
Georgia.
Georgia went from being maybe a play or two away from that being a 41-10 game and borderline cruise control to just getting thrown over the top of and struggling and having issues. And I know you saw the clip with Kirby going on the sideline and kind of nudging into the player a little bit when he was walking down through the sideline. Just
after the roughing the passer?
It's not a the fan base in Athens is maybe not necessarily happy with what their team looks like at this point.
Yeah, and that's okay. Win next week and everybody will be jacked out of their mind and you'll forget about all that crap. Interesting thing with me with Georgia after watching this game. Going into this game, Brent, Oscar Delp had 3 catches. How is that possible? Like, this is a team that was centric on the tight end position, and that's what it revolved around. Everything they did was 12 personnel. Everything they did was since Darnell Washington days with Charlie Warner, yes, too. I mean, that's who they've been, and now I think they kind of got a little bit of a crisis identity in who they are and what they're going to be offensively. And I thought today Auburn, they took what was given to them. Today, you saw the same type of a game plan for Mississippi State. They weren't giving up deep balls, so they were spitting on the perimeter quick. Injuries up front, I think, is still limiting to running the football. And listen, 1-3 need to touch it. 22 is, I think he got dinged up today, so I don't know if that will.
Yeah, he's going to be out for a while.
Yeah, that will be a thing, anyways. But offensively, they showed some creativity with the fake reverse, and so I like some of that creativity. I think they're going to continue to need to build it, but defensively, I watched them struggle today against Mississippi State with a lot of the principles that Texas is going to try next week.
Yes.
Fake screen and goes.
Misdirection.
Discipline, stuff like that, I think that Texas masters in. And I think Georgia's offense is going to have to play really, really well. I don't think their defense is in shutdown mode where they're going to go lock Texas down. So I think we're going to see, 2 good quarterbacks, by the way, coming into the year. We talked about this being the number 1, number 2 pick in the draft, the best 2 quarterbacks in college football, and we're going to get a chance to see them in Austin. But what else stuck out? You know what stuck out for Georgia before I give it to you?
Okay.
A lot of this, Brent. Number 5, Anthony Evans, who we haven't seen. London Humphreys, number 16, who we haven't seen since game 1, really, a lot of. Juracek, the tight end, number 84, like, there's a lot of guys catching balls for Georgia because I don't think they have a clue yet who the guy is. And so I think they're still throwing. And listen, you also got Colby getting in trouble and obviously had more trouble with Ra-Ra before that. So the receiver position is, man, it's. I think they're still figuring out who they are, what they want to be from a personnel and receiver standpoint.
The personnel part is hard because, like you said, they've been a 12 personnel team, and that's been kind of the core of what they do, but no Brock, no Darnett, you don't replace those guys, and it's hard to get that. But I think the biggest thing from them going into the Texas game from a positive standpoint is Carson Beck over the past few weeks just looks like he's more in a rhythm. And look, outside of the interception in the second half that was just a bad ball, but outside of that, hit the down the field throws more than he has in a while. And by the way, threw it 48 times a day. So if you're going to throw it 48 times, you can get into a rhythm throwing it that many times. And they're going to have to play in the 30s and score a lot of points and win that game offensively because what they're seeing defensively is just it's not the standard of Georgia. It looks like something you're not used to seeing it.
Well, and I think they're starting to realize that, Brent. I think they're starting to realize that, like, this is not the team that's going to be super balanced. And this is who we are. We're going to chuck the football a lot. And, with that, Carson's also made a lot more mistakes. There's less play action. And so it's more, we know you're passing the football more often. You got 2 starters out on the offensive line, so he's getting hit more. And he's getting beat up, dude, by the way. If you're watching, Carson got more hits already this season than he's been hit. He was hit all of last year. So taking some shots. The offense is one-dimensional right now, but Carson Beck and receivers. I think he attacked the middle of the field like last year's Carson Beck. I saw a lot of those in-breaking routes, those digs that were good. He hit Arian Smith late, you know, later in the game, finally hit him for a connection. You know, I don't understand when Arian's open why he has to dive for the ball. Like, we need to be able to float that up there and let his fast butt run underneath it. I'd like to see Arian be more consistent catching the football. But, yeah, their offense, I think, is still finding itself. But I think they know that they're going to be a pass-first offense.
Yep. It's – when you think about the totality of the day, though, Oregon getting it done in Eugene and against Ryan Day, against their former coach in a way. You know, Chip Kelly was up in the booth calling plays against them. It doesn't get any bigger win for them for Oregon, because I think they're going to be likely number one. I think they might keep that for a while, and we'll see them move along. But you never know. That's one, like you said, in terms of who's elite, any given Saturday, it's definitely a thing.
Well, and the cool thing about all of this is 12-team playoff means really nobody's out. You know, like the teams that are in it that we're talking about, like all these teams that are at the top. And I would even argue Ole Miss still has a chance. Like if they can win out, yeah. And
yes.
it's going to be interesting to watch. So everybody's upset with their team and upset that they're losing, but you know, Ohio State doesn't have anything to really worry about. Like, you're still in the mix. Georgia already lost to Bama. You're still in the mix. Vandy, you know, beat Alabama. Alabama's still in the mix. Tennessee's got a loss. You're still in the mix. You know, I think it's a good thing. Like, Penn State very much now surviving in the mix, even if they lose to Ohio State down the road with a favorable schedule. They don't have to play Oregon. Remember, Oregon doesn't have to play Penn State. So I think also the Big Ten. You got something else?
Well, it's the 12 team makes it more NFL like, where each loss is not ending of the season, but also the nature of the game, and we've kind of talked about this, lifting up of the degradation of the top and then lifting up of the bottom, the any given Saturday, it's taking care of business. Can you button up? Coaching matters, I think, more even more so now versus just having the best dudes and the most dudes out there. So it's going to be a week to week game where one week you might feel great. The next week you're going to play not so great.
Well, and the good thing is we'll be here every week. We're going to keep doing this. So we'll keep giving you the recaps on Saturday night. So if you like it, please hit the subscribe, and we'll keep doing the previews that we keep putting out on Thursdays of all the matchups, man. College football is definitely at one of its fun stages, and we'll continue to ride this ride until it ends, and with history, with the new 12-team playoff.
It's at David Pollock, CFB on YouTube, and then wherever you find your podcasts. Nice little logo, DPCFB, on the Apple Podcast thing, so be sure you check it out there.
What he said.